before we begin today, I just wanted to give a quick note on current events. So, I might be a little late on this, but recently Haiti has been in the news a lot. And so I thought I would write this short little podcast bit to explain what's going on. So, the gangs in Haiti are really powerful and are basically terrorist organizations. They control about 80% of Port-au-Prince, and they seek to prevent the government from cracking down on them. In February, the Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, had gone down to Kenya to try to find foreign soldiers who would come help him crack down on the gangs. The gangs, in response to this, launched a war on the Haitian government. They killed police, stormed prisons, and freed like 4,000 prisoners, and even attacked the international airport. Against these attacks, the Haitian state proved themselves to be unable to fight back. Now, the violence in the capital has gotten worse. Gangs now target schools and hospitals. Rape, sex slavery, child slavery, kidnappings, and murders have all become common in the capital. So far, about 1,500 people have died because of gang violence. Meanwhile, 17,000 have been left homeless. And over just 2 weeks, 33,000 people have fled the capital. There's been some hope, as the U.S. government has agreed to give some amounts of money to help pay for a Haitian police force. The United Nations estimates that about 5,000 soldiers or police would be needed to quell the gangs. On the political front, the Prime Minister resigned, and some kind of transitional council with representatives from most of the political parties has been set up, but it doesn't seem to have a lot of power, and it's kind of unclear what's going to happen with it. Beyond just the gang violence, a severe famine is looking like it's going to occur. About 40% of Haiti faces food insecurity, and about 1.6 million Haitians are expected to suffer from famine soon. In these terrible times, the work of Haitian charities is critical. One charity which I wanted to point out was the Haitian Holistic Alliance, or HHA. It works with communities to develop them, educate people, provide people with meals, and more. It even rescues children from slavery. In the description of this episode, I put a link to donate to them, and I highly suggest you do. Hello, and welcome to the History of Haiti. Last episode, I covered the development of the two main political parties, the right-wing liberals and the leftist nationals. In this episode, the tension between the two political parties will come to a head, leading to yet another violent revolt. I ended last episode with President Pierre-Laurent Sénau resigning after a revolt against his rule. As I talked about last episode, Sénau had created his own faction within the Liberal Party, as opposed to the faction of liberals led by Boyer Bazalès, and so he was distrusted by many of them. Sénau even sided with the National Party over the liberals. When Sénau resigned, he left a provisional government in power. This provisional government, perhaps because they were liberals, or for whatever reason, were dragging their feet on electing Lysias Solomon as the next president. To force an election, the commander of the Port-au-Prince garrison decided to launch a coup. This went well, and the three leaders of the provisional government were all thrown in prison. The commander of the garrison then created a new provisional government, led by a guy named Florville Hippolyte, a future president. The sole job of this provisional government was to elect the next president of Haiti, or have the House of Representatives, now styled the National Assembly, elect him. Everyone knew who that next president would be. On October 23, 1879, Lysias Solomon was elected unanimously by the National Assembly, with the liberal deputies deciding to abstain. After his revolt against Sanaa, Boyer Bazalgette and about 80 of his liberal allies chose to go into exile. And so they fled to Jamaica, where they would soon be joined by yet more disaffected liberals. The early actions of Solomon reflected his ideas of black nationalism. He set about showing his stance on previous Haitian rulers. For his old boss, Salouk, he gave his land, which had been seized by the state, back to his family. Meanwhile, he tried to launch legal proceedings against Giffard's family. He also gave a state funeral to Solnov, as Solnov had been on the side of the Piquets. Finally, Solomon pardoned Roizron Sanaa, who was also in exile, but who would not join in the group of Bazalgette's liberals in their attempted coup. When he took office, Solomon declared that he would substitute a political revolution with an economic revolution. In his exile, he had seen Paris and London, and he had ideas about the industrial revolution he observed. Solomon's aspiration, like many other Haitian leaders, was to drag Haiti into the modern age. And so, over the course of a few years, he began many infrastructural plots to attempt to modernize Haiti. For example, in 1881, Solomon and Haiti joined the Universal Postal Union, an international organization that existed both then and now as the global supervisor of mail. Similarly, Solomon granted a British company the right to put an underwater telegraph cable between Port-au-Prince and Kingston, Jamaica. Solomon also made new public works, such as building a new national palace as well as other government buildings. This included a transformation of the schools. Solomon reformed and greatly expanded the educational system, building new primary schools, secondary schools, universities, and trade schools. He expanded education out into the countryside rather than just the major cities. He improved currently existing schools and began recruiting teachers from France. What Solomon had in mind was a universal education for everyone in Haiti. He believed that education would create social modernization in Haiti and foster a sense of unity among the Haitian people. Some of his projects didn't turn out as well, though. For example, at the start of his rule, he had ambitions to create railroads and telegraph wires to connect the country, but due to a lack of funds, these ambitions never materialized. Speaking of finance, one of Solomon's most important infrastructural projects was to create a national bank for Haiti, and this project would turn out to be a huge mistake. So it has been a while since I talked about the French indemnity. Remember that? The huge amount of money France had demanded Haiti pay for its independence? Yeah, that's still around. Throughout the time since it had been taken out, Haitian leaders had been slowly paying off that loan. But to pay for that loan, and to make up for large budget deficits, Haitian leaders had to keep taking out more and more loans. As I mentioned very briefly last episode, in 1874, Michel Domingue took out a huge loan, and then took out another one the next year to cover the 1874 loan. These loans were meant to cover the indemnity, as well as to help Domingue with his own infrastructural projects. But, as I also talked about last episode, the loans were taken out on terrible terms and were heavily embezzled. These loans caused the Haitian national debt to nearly triple, from 16 million francs to 44 million francs. Haiti's financial situation in Haiti itself also wasn't great. Even a decade after the fact, the country was still feeling the effects of Solnov and his civil war on the currency. So to stabilize the financial situation, Solomon decided to work with a French company to create a Haitian national bank. What Solomon basically did was give the rights of finances of the Haitian government away to a French company. The Banque Nationale de Haïti, or BNH, was set up in Paris by a large French banking company known as the Crédit Industriel et Commercial, or CIC. The BNH was a privately owned company, owned by French shareholders. This private ownership meant that it had loyalty to the French bankers, not to the Haitian government. It had control over the Haitian tax revenue, repayments of the loans, and had control over printing Haitian money. It even charged the government to print Haitian dollars in France. To Solomon's credit, its printing of money did help stabilize the Haitian currency quite a bit and make it acceptable to foreigners. But of course, BNH's main business was the indemnity, or rather all the loans that had been taken out to service the indemnity. In fact, under Solomon in 1883, the last of the original indemnity was paid off. But the loans taken to pay off the indemnity had only grown, and they would continue to grow with interest. This huge national debt would continue to grow and grow, and it's going to come up again and again and again. The upshot of all of this is that it drained the coffers of the Haitian government. It meant that the money which would have been spent building Solomon's railroads and telegraph wires instead went to pay French bankers. It meant that the Haitian money was not adequately used to modernize and develop Haiti the way it could have been, which, of course, all ties back to Haiti's modern-day poverty. One of Solomon's more successful reforms was a reorganization of the Haitian military. As part of a general restructuring of the government's administration, Solomon reformed the structure of the army to make it more uniform. He separated the Haitian Navy into its own field. He established an officer school to train the leaders of the army. He also introduced a conscription system where almost all 20-year-old men would have to serve in the army, and all men who, in general, who were not in the army, had to join their local National Guard units. This organized army would aid him greatly in the upcoming liberal revolt. With Solomon wanting economic growth, he not only looked towards foreign powers, but also towards the common Haitian peasantry. And so he decided on a policy of land redistribution. Solomon believed that if all the peasants could own land, that they would transform it into productive land, and that the economy would grow from this overall boost in productivity. So he enacted a law offering free public land to anyone who would cultivate it, and further encouraging the owners of land to do so. This was Solomon taking from the ideas of the Piquets, who 40 years earlier had also advocated for the distribution of land. But many were concerned. With the status quo, while most of the plantations were gone, there were still a lot of large farms owned by colored elites that required workers, and they feared that the new law would drain their supply of labor. This created resentment against Solomon by the elites, as well as the pre-existing resentment by the liberals. Seeing his chance, Boyer Bezalels decided that the time was right to overthrow Solomon. In Kingston, Jamaica, Bezalels and his 100 or so liberals packed up, boarded an American ship that had agreed to aid them, and set sail for Haiti. On March 27, 1883, less than a month after the law on distribution of land was passed, Bezalels landed in the port city of Miragon and immediately seized control of it. Armed with good American weapons and with strong defensive positions, the small group of liberal rebels were able to repel attacks from government forces. Hearing about this, people in other southern cities such as Jacmel, Jeremy, Akane, and even Port-au-Prince tried to join in on the revolt. This war played out much like a milder version of the Solna War from a few episodes ago. A few major cities were controlled by the colored elite liberal rebels, while the majority of the territory was controlled by the nationals. There was a lot of small-scale fighting and bloodshed, but the main events were the sieges, especially the Siege of Miragon, which I'll get to in a second. In the capital of Port-au-Prince, some of the worst violence occurred. In September, a gang of young colored liberals attempted to revolt and successfully seized the headquarters of the police. There, they killed a very popular and beloved general, and in response, the soldiers routed them. Before the gang fled, they set fire to the building. To get revenge for their fallen generals, the soldiers rioted. They targeted property owned by elites and ransacked it. This killed many people, starting fires, and even damaged foreign property. Solomon allowed this sacking for 2 days, until 8 foreign consuls came to him and demanded that he stop his soldiers, or they would bombard the city. They demanded a large amount of cash for all the damages to foreigners. In total, about 36 people were killed in this riot. Back in the south, the revolt began to phase out in the winter. In Miragon, conditions had become terrible, with no food and a massive spread of disease. Boyer Bezalès himself succumbed to the disease in October. In December, Jacmel fell and Jeremy surrendered. Solomon had a lot of leniency except for the city of Miragon. When Miragon fell, the city was intentionally or unintentionally burned heavily, almost to the ground. The real tragedy of this war was the chance for a real parliamentary democracy in Haiti. For a brief period, the two political parties had been going after each other non-violently. But of course, this collapsed into revolt and suppression. That's not to say that the political parties would not continue, as both would. And as we will see next episode, Sanal and his liberals will return.